This is your BizNews briefing, where we unpack significant headlines, political developments, and global news shaping your world. I'm Bronwyn Nielsen. Here's a quick rundown of what's coming up on today's show. MTN chairman Imsibisi Jonas claims he's the target of a treasonous info war harming US-South Africa ties. The DA's Cillia Brink speaks to the importance of citizen engagement. We bring you analysis of Fed Chair Powell's Jackson Hole speech, examine Russia's influence on Trump, and Springbok coach Rassie Erasmus reflects on beating Australia this weekend. First, let's turn to the controversy surrounding Imsibisi Jonas. Appointed by President Cyril Ramaphosa in April 2025 to help mend fences with the Trump administration, Jonas now finds himself at the center of what he describes as a treasonous information war. Speaking to the Sunday Times this weekend, Jonas claims that influential South Africans are orchestrating a campaign to isolate the country on the world stage. Jonas's appointment was contentious right from the outset, with critics pointing to his previous remarks about Donald Trump, describing him as a racist, homophobic, and narcissistic right-winger. His role at MTN has also come under scrutiny as the company faces serious legal challenges in the United States related to its operations in Iran and Afghanistan. EFF Deputy President Godrej Gadi has argued that Jonas was not properly vetted, particularly in light of MTN's ties with Iran, a country viewed as an adversary by the US. Meanwhile, Emma Pal of the DA raised concerns about Jonas's diplomatic status and MTN's alleged violations of anti-terrorism laws, but later resigned, citing threats and harassment. Jonas compares the attacks against him to the infamous Gupta-era misinformation campaign, saying they have created the perfect storm and we are caught in the vortex. Despite the controversy, Jonas remains committed to his work, insisting he will not be distracted by defamatory allegations. Next, we turn to local politics. Cillia Brink, the DA's mayoral candidate for Tshwane, joined the DA podcast this weekend. Brink is candid about the challenges facing Pretoria, including deep-rooted corruption and the breakdown of service delivery. He emphasizes that real change begins with active participation, urging citizens to make their voices heard at the polls. Here's Cillia's on why your vote truly matters.
The most powerful argument to get people there is say, if you vote, you get to decide the stakes of how power is divvied up. You get to decide how this place is governed. And the important message to those young people is that there is a future. There is hope for South Africa. Mm. We have been let down. We have been disappointed. But never buy into this idea that it's all over and that everything is just going to hell. It's not true. Our country has been through a lot. If you read history, if you know, we were at a precipice of civil war, this country. And we overcame that. And even though the politicians have been disappointing, there are people of integrity who are fighting for a future for young people to make sure that there are the opportunities and the jobs. But it starts with stuff like fixing infrastructure. Talk about infrastructure. It doesn't sound sexy. But if you don't have water, if you don't have electricity, if you don't have the roads, you're not going to get the investments. Mm-hmm. You're not going to build the confidence. Mm-hmm. And that is why we need to be involved in this political process.
Now let's move to global developments. Apple is in early talks to use Google's Gemini AI to power a revamped Siri, signaling a potential shift in how the tech giant approaches artificial intelligence. Bloomberg's Mark Gurman has more on this emerging story.
So Apple's holding what they call a bake-off internally, where they're trying to determine what's the best direction for the future of Siri. Right now, Siri runs on what they call Apple Foundation models. In other words, underlying technology developed by Apple, right? We know from experience that in use, it's not always very good or as powerful as the competition. And so they're looking at what would it look like if Siri, instead of being powered by Apple technology, was powered by outside technology. And so they have begun talking in recent weeks with Google about the prospect of using Gemini models to power Siri. Previously, they've held very similar discussions with Anthropic. They got pretty deep with them, and to OpenAI to a lesser extent. So right now, basically trying to determine whether they should work with OpenAI, Anthropic, or Gemini, or stick to the status quo, which is their in-house model technology.
Is it going to be a cost decision or an efficiency decision?
It's a mix of everything. Anthropic, I'm told, in the talks with Apple, have set a pretty high bar for pricing. OpenAI, obviously, are going public in a couple of years, so they want to hold a very high bar on pricing as well. Gemini, they have an existing relationship with Apple in terms of the parent company, Google, their larger $20 billion or so a year search deal that could be upended by the Department of Justice any week now. So there's certainly a lot of factors at play. I think, if you ask me personally, that 99% of consumers don't know or don't care who's powering the AI technology on their devices. They just want Siri to work. So I think at the end of the day, Apple's going to do what's best for the customer, but we shall see.
Michelle's a mom who traded in her Fiat 500 for this beast right here. But why the momentous move, huh?
I needed something bigger to keep up with my growing son in his mini sports bags.
When you traded in your car with WeBuyCars, was it an easy conversion?
I see what you did there. The process was just so easy. I was given a tablet, had to sign, and that was it.
Basically, WeBuyCars is no mess, no fuss. Okay, it was nice chatting. WeBuyCars, the easiest way to sell your car by far.
At SunExchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
At the Jackson Hole Economic Policy Symposium, Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell addressed key issues facing the United States economy. PIMCO's Richard Clarida provides expert analysis on what to expect next.
The chair certainly intended to open the door pretty wide to cutting September. Importantly, Lisa, he spent a lot of time on balance of risk, which is what policymakers do, but at the two key junctures, he highlighted the balance of risk to the labor market is to a weaker labor market. And he basically indicated that the balance of risk to higher inflation doesn't appear to be a first order concern in terms of persistent inflation. So I think the message was they think they're going to cut in September. We get some more data and the markets have reacted to that.
How much do you think that this is partly to maintain the Fed's credibility, not necessarily with respect to the president, but that right now, if they get it wrong on the labor market front, that it is that much more pernicious based on some of the job owning by what we hear from the president?
Well, yeah. I mean, as the chair said in the remarks, it's a curious kind of balance in the labor market. The payroll employment growth has been very, very weak in the private sector, but the unemployment rate has not gone up. And so they are really focused on the balance of risk. Look, the Fed has a dual mandate. It's costly to let inflation move higher and stay there, but it's also costly to have a recession with a rise in the unemployment. And I think, Lisa, you're correct. They are tilting in that direction now.
It feels like a very different Jackson Hole, and this is something that we've been talking about with all of our guests today, Rich, that people have come on and said there is a different tone about central banking independence and a question of how to communicate at a time of such political interference. What's your sense of where that was in the speech that we just heard from Fed Chair Jay Powell?
I think the approach the chair took was to really focus front and center, Lisa, on the dual mandate that's assigned by Congress, maximum employment and price stability. And the chair gave a very reasoned and thoughtful analysis and discussion of how they're balancing the dual mandate risks. And I think that's the Jay Powell message to the issue of Fed independence. We have an assignment from Congress, and this is what we're doing to achieve it.
Evelyn Farkas, former Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense, discusses Russia's influence over President Trump and outlines possible security guarantees for Ukraine. She advocates for secondary sanctions and greater support from the US and from Europe.
If there's a single person who can put an end to the war, it is Vladimir Putin, ultimately, because he's waging this war against Ukraine. Ukraine doesn't want a war. They would put down their weapons the minute, you know, Russia really is willing to make peace. Having said that, short of Vladimir Putin, the next person with all the cards and all the influence to make this war end is President Trump. But of course, it requires us to put more pressure on the Kremlin. And that means sanctions, that means providing more weapons to Ukraine. And I'm glad to see that President Trump is threatening sanctions again. Although I will say, I don't know why he's waiting 2 weeks, because President Putin has clearly been playing for time to get his troops more time on the battlefield. And that is not in the interest of the United States.
Evelyn, we have heard from Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov essentially that they have very little interest in a meeting right now. He was dismissive in an interview on NBC's Meet the Press that will air this weekend of the idea of a meeting between Vladimir Putin and Zelensky. Yet Donald Trump is signaling that he'd be willing to give as much as 2 weeks to the Russian leader. Is that too much time? Should Donald Trump simply turn around now and say, look, it's time to move on sanctions?
Yes, and he should have turned around and done that, you know, when the Russian president refused his ceasefire ultimatum, you know, at that meeting in Alaska last Friday. So, you know, I think our president is being way too lenient when it comes to Vladimir Putin. And we have all the power to make Vladimir Putin afraid, so afraid that when President Trump threatened sanctions before, Vladimir Putin said, oh, wait, don't sanction me. I'll come and meet you in Alaska. Well, he came to Alaska. Again, President Trump said, you know, you need to give us a ceasefire and start negotiating in earnest. And President Putin said no, went away. And I guess maybe he gave President Trump the impression that he would meet with President Zelensky one-on-one. Those of us who know how Putin thinks and understand kind of the mentality, the ideology that's driving him, know that he does not view President Zelensky as his equal. He would never meet one-on-one with President Zelensky unless he was, you know, defeated militarily by President Zelensky and President Trump insisted on it. So, unfortunately, I think the Russians have been misleading our president, and we really need to slap those sanctions on, as you said, Tyler, or Mike, rather, immediately.
And finally, on the sports front, Springboks head coach Rassie Erasmus reflects on South Africa's gritty 30-22 victory over Australia in Cape Town. After a tough defeat in Johannesburg, Erasmus and his squad regrouped and returned to a forward-driven game plan under challenging conditions.
I think a win can be a 6-7. So there's we know there wasn't a perfect performance, but sometimes just getting back onto the horse. And for that, we give the team, because a lot of people tend to think when we lose a game, you know, there's all these massive problems and everybody starts analysing the squads and stuff, which is passionate South African supporters. So I think with the kind of pressure we were under this weekend, for that I'll give the team a 7.
That brings us to the end of today's BizNews briefing. We'll be back tomorrow with more context on the global and local front. Thanks as always for watching.